Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding, ling, ling, city desk.
Media Project, a half-hour commentary and analysis, and some days even some insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hi, Chief.
And here is Rosemary Armeo, an investigative journalist and professor.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Very glad to see you. And Judith, Judy Patrick. Did anybody ever call you Judith?
Of course, my mother.
Your mother, yes.
When I was doing something wrong.
Yes, I would sometimes be Rex William. Yes, I know what that's like. Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette and vice president of the New York Press Association. So we are approaching the impeachment trial. With limited press coverage, there is a lot of restriction now that has been placed on how this can be covered in the Congress. The Senate will keep journalists. The sergeant-at-arms says that press access will be curtailed perhaps 2 weeks or more, which is highly unusual, confining reporters to a press pen on the second floor of the Capitol and limiting their ability to walk with senators from the Senate subways. Good idea? Do the senators deserve to have a little protection from reporters?
Well, look, this is a real circus when it comes to the media, and it's a perfect example of what we do here on the Media Project, I think, because clearly everything that the Republicans in the Senate are doing right now is meant to hold back the press because they're in an untenable situation. They don't want to allow witnesses. They don't want to allow materials. They don't want to allow a good deal of what would make a fair trial in the Senate. So they think that by punishing the press, and that ain't all, Rex, there's also the question of only one stinking camera as opposed to several different angles.
Correct.
And so what we're going to see here is, despite the First Amendment, they're going to do everything in their power to keep it quiet. And that, of course, is like the old story about don't fool with a skunk because, you know, just get them mad. And I think what's going to happen here is they're going to get the press really mad.
The rules also include a 10-minute delay between the adjournment of any session and when questions can be taken, which, of course, gives you time to escape or to frame an answer. And it is the public, not just the press. They're trying to keep at bay. You'll remember when those two women famously got on the elevator with Jeff Flake during the Kavanaugh hearing and accosted him for his unconscionable vote, as they put it. And they don't want that to happen again. So this is an excuse to say we have to teach the press and the public a lesson in decorum. It's secrecy. That's all it is.
And I think people should know, I know Rex knows it because he spent a lot of time there, and you guys probably know it, there are a lot of members-only elevators in both the Senate and the House. And for the most part, they're pretty solid about making sure that nobody gets on an elevator with a senator.
Hey, let's not forget that some portions of this trial, they're going to go into closed session where nobody can attend, and the public will be totally left out of what they're saying and how that debate is going forward. This is incredible.
Yeah, that is outrageous, isn't it? A closed session of the U.S. Senate, the question would be, is there an excuse for that, a rationale for that, other than when national security is at stake? And is national security at stake in this matter?
That's their argument, that national security is at stake. But here's the other thing, is that this is a rule now. Do you think it's going to be just for impeachment, or will it be extended, just like the suspension of press briefings in the White House was a temporary thing until it's now become a permanent thing?
Mm-hmm. So you have all these senators crying about how they're being harassed by the press as they walk in the hall, you know, cry me a river. They all want to be on TV anyway and be adults and face the press and the public, because that's what the press is.
You know, Judy, the longer you're away from your editorship, the more wild you're getting. And I, for one, appreciate it.
Even some Republican senators are objecting to the rules and calling for a rollback.
Well, it will be interesting to see how the dynamic plays out as this goes forward, because the American public so far has tolerated, it seems, and sort of turned a blind eye to the limitations on what people have been able to see, what evidence is introduced, and so on. If the public outcry becomes significant, we'll see if that at all moves Mitch McConnell. President McConnell, as some are calling him.
No. Not one thing has made McConnell move away from this president, who has so many Republicans behind him, and he's not gonna move. That's my view of it. He's scared to death of this president.
It is interesting, by the way, that
I don't think it's fair.
There isn't really a pushback. There's not a way that you can do much. We are the so-called powerful media really has no power here.
Well, except that we're all talking about it now. And that's because when you fool with the press, they're going to let everybody know about it. I'm sorry, Rosemary, you're going to say.
Yeah, I don't think McConnell's acting out of fear. I agree with what you said he's doing. I think he's a criminal co-conspirator. His wife is as deeply corrupt as Trump, and she's in a high government office. He is getting through his dream judiciary. Why would he break with Trump? Even when Trump was calling him names, he just kept his eye on where he wanted to go.
Well, here's the deal. He's 2 points behind in the polls in Kentucky, and he's running for office again. So he, on the one hand, he's worried about Trump, obviously. And on the other hand, if he appears to be facilitating a trial that is a sham, I have a feeling some purples in Kentucky. Remember, they elected a Democratic governor.
All right, you guys can take that up on the other program that you're on, not the
from
media project.
From a media perspective, I'm interested to see who's going to broadcast this trial. And whether I, as a citizen, I'm going to be able to watch it on anything other than C-SPAN. Mm-hmm. Because I think the first part of the impeachment did get some viewership. I think the networks had to sacrifice some advertising dollars and some regular programming for it. But I think this is important for the broadcast stations to do.
Think how far we've come from the early 60s when Fred Friendly, who was the president of CBS News, resigned because CBS refused to air the Fulbright hearings, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearings on the Vietnam War. There was the seventh rerun of an I Love Lucy episode that famously aired instead of an important hearing, and this led the president of CBS News to resign. There is no similar pushback, is there, from broadcast executives to decisions to keep commercial programming rolling instead of this important content?
I am amazed, just for the record, at your recall of those details.
It's just one. I was a Fred Friendly student, so you had to know these things about Fred. That was just fun stuff. But it is amazing. There isn't any, I don't think there's any push, even in this era when we have so many more opportunities, so many more venues for content to be delivered to people than when we just had three broadcast networks back then. Why isn't MSNBC or why isn't CNN with two channels under its ownership? Why aren't at least these alternate channels committing to full gavel-to-gavel coverage?
Right. I don't know, but I think WAMC is.
Is that right?
I think we will be. It depends on how long this thing goes on. It could go on forever.
Yeah, yeah. That would be interesting. Are you not saying anything, Rosemary, since I shut down the conversation about politics? Are you?
No, I've forgiven you for that. No, I'm not saying anything because I'm trying to think if I believe that. I don't think we've seen any reaction yet because they don't know what the final deal is going to be. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And just one camera does not make for very good television as well.
Yeah, nobody would be
watching. And they're doing that on purpose, of course.
Right. All right. On to the other big issue that's going on now. Of course, we are in the process, even as one president is being impeached, of looking to find nominees for the other party in this race. And we had the last Democratic debate before the very important Iowa caucuses. And there are some who say that there was a flub by a CNN moderator. CNN's Abby Phillip was asking the question about this so-called back and forth between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Did Bernie Sanders say that a woman could not become president? He denied it. And the next logical question he said when she said is, I do want to be clear here, she said, you're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election. Sanders said, that is correct. So you would think she would then turn to Elizabeth Warren and say, Senator Warren, did Senator Sanders ever tell you that? Instead, she said, Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman cannot win the election? In effect, saying, Elizabeth Warren, you're right. He's wrong.
That's a real big interpretation. Now, investigative reporters do that all the time. They ask the question as if it were true. And the answer certainly gave her the chance to say what her answer was. I disagree. So she did confirm that he said it. I thought it was a funny moment. The crowd laughed. I laughed. It was an impactful question. I don't think it was improper.
Really?
And the other thing that happened, of course, is that a microphone that should have been off.
That was after the debate.
Yeah. It was there in which Elizabeth Warren came up to Sanders and said, Did you just call me a liar on national TV?
No, she didn't ask it as a question. She made it as a statement. I think you just called me a liar on national television.
Well, and
he goes, let's not do it here, which was a smart thing to do. And this whole thing that the media is concentrating on is ridiculous. It's meaningless. I think Chris Churchill has hit on what really happened. This is two people in a conversation, and they interpreted it a different way. And if you hear Bernie, he always says, I never said that a woman couldn't be president. But that's not what Elizabeth Warren is saying, he said. She won't win. A woman wouldn't win. That's different than whether one could be a president. Maybe it's a misinterpretation like that. Why are we making it the big deal that we are?
Right.
The media. We are at fault in this.
A very good point. I don't know that I understand why it is that you think it's okay that the reporter basically said that Sanders is a liar.
No, it was a matter of emphasis. This is oral. It isn't written. If it were written, yeah. But she says to him, so let me be clear. You're saying you never said it. Then she turns to Warren and goes, okay, what did you say when he told you that? And everyone laughed. I got it right away. She was challenging her to say he was a liar. I thought it was good television and a good question.
Interesting.
Do you disagree, Judy?
I do, because I thought the obvious follow-up question would be, he just said that he never said this. What is your response to that? Again, it's nuanced. Maybe I'm not picking up, but
I thought the next question should have been,
he just called you a liar.
You know, it is interesting, to Rosemary's point, that we shouldn't be focusing so much on this. This is a media topic, and here we are talking about it because we love conflict. Humans love the fight, and there were all kinds of issues. Iran.
Wait, Rex, 1 second. I think we're talking about it not only because of the fight here, but because it's a principle. I mean, I happen to believe we should have a woman president of the United States. And therefore, when the accusation is that a leading candidate said a woman couldn't win, I think it's terribly important.
Hmm.
No?
No. This is all about the two progressives in the battle for nomination being at odds with each other after they've worked extremely hard not to be at odds with each other.
Mom and Dad are fighting.
Yeah,
is one of
exactly.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get into what Rex calls the other program's content, but what's so clear to me is both of these people, and it reflects in the media and in the press, both of these people know that if they're to win, they have to take some votes out of the other guy's pot, because together, those progressives have the most votes. And so now, in order to win, in order to be president, in order to get the nomination, they're doing what they might not even want to be doing. They have to battle with each other.
Okay, but they're using the media as a tool to accomplish their goals.
Exactly.
Are we going to allow that? Is that really what we think everybody wants to talk about right now?
I think so.
Who started it all? Who leaked the initial conversation that Warren is reporting? Where did that come from?
It is an interesting question. She apparently told some people about it right afterwards, and that's supposedly is how it came out. Do you think that happened without Elizabeth Warren's nodding her head and saying, go ahead and tell somebody about it? Because she has famously said that she has not been attacking other candidates until just recently. She was really standing aside from any attacks. So it seems as though either she allowed the people she had told about this to go ahead and do it, or they just decided to let it out.
Hard to believe. Or, as Lewis once said to my mother, that's my twin brother, he started it.
And you never said that about him, about Lewis,
yeah,
did you?
I have.
That's a good comparison, because this is a childish fight, and it is not what the Democratic nomination process should be about, or the media should not be concentrating
on.
Well,
we, of course, are at great odds on this one, Rosemary.
I think, that's unusual.
I think the concept of whether a woman should be president or could be president of the United States from presidential utterances, from candidates' utterances, becomes very important, and I believe in it.
You know, this whole issue of the media being used as a tool by one side or the other, this is what happened when the Russians started leaking Podesta's emails. We were tools. You dangle an enticing bit of information, and the media feels its obligation to run with it. And I think this is something we're going to have to deal with for the next 10 months.
Well, as Rex has always told us, the media is not one newspaper or one thing. So what were they to do? Was CNN not to talk about it and have MSNBC be the only ones who do it, or Fox the only ones who do it? Tell me, Judy, what could they do? Say, we're not going to cover any of this stuff?
Well, for all of the claims to the contrary, political pundits who now dominate cable television find fighting a lot more interesting than conversation about issues. And so do Americans. Look, the sports that have the I can't believe that I'm saying, look, this is again sounding like Elizabeth Warren. I think this
they
is
all
become,
sound like they, it. Did yeah. you notice that in look. The debate? Now look. Yeah, every one of them. Now look.
I always say, look, David.
It used to just be Warren, but now it is everyone. It's spread. Yeah. But, you know, this is a dangerous thing to say because I know that both stories actually were covered. But while we're talking about Elizabeth Warren and whether women can be president, the ERA was passed by the 38th state yesterday. And now a major battle, it is conflict, will shape up in the federal judiciary about whether the ERA can be passed because there is built into the original law back from 1972, may I remind you, women are still not constitutionally protected, a deadline, and that deadline is decades past. So can we get around that? This is a wonderfully interesting story and far more important than what Bernie Sanders thinks a woman can or cannot do.
So one is to be president of the United States. I don't think, Rosemary, I'm going to agree with you on this one either. It's not a question of either or. Obviously, both should be covered. The ERA, people are incredibly ignorant of what exactly is in the ERA.
Has always been thus. I was the editor of a little country newspaper in Indiana when that was pending. And it was the same summer that Richard Nixon was facing impeachment. And I'll tell you, it was easier for us to have coverage of the Nixon impeachment. That was less controversial than the ERA yep. out in the Midwestern farming communities. There were community meetings where women denounced people who stood up to speak in support of it because they said, you know, we're going to have to go to the bathroom with the men. It was outrageously misdirected. Local politicians, state legislators' careers were lost because they dared to speak up in support of equal rights for women. Imagine this. And here we are today, 40 years later. Still
my mother and I, for years, have collected magazines about important historical events. And last night I pulled out a 1982 Time magazine when the ERA was declared dead because the 10-year deadline had passed and there were not 38 states, there were only 35. And the headline on the cover was, "Gender Equality, When Will It Come?" So do I think this is an important issue for the media? Obviously, I do. But I don't think it does anyone any service, not the Democratic Party, not the people at large, and not women, to cover this little spat between Bernie and Elizabeth,
but
which is really
it,
about power, not about gender rights.
No,
but
it's
when
about,
you consider
it's about election. It's about election.
Yeah, election, getting elected.
Getting
power.
Elected. And they know if they don't get some of the other guys' votes, they're not going to win.
So gender equality and racial equality, I mean, consider this. The person that people thought was perhaps a very hopeful African-American candidate, Cory Booker, has failed to spark enough support to continue in the presidential campaign. So fell before him Kamala Harris. There is some analysis that it was press almost fatigue with Cory Booker because so many great things had been written about him earlier in his career. Oh, my goodness, look at this amazing mayor of Newark and so on. That was one of the reasons why he wasn't able to draw much attention.
He peaked too early.
He peaked, yeah, he years too early. Isn't
I don't know. I think you're right, Rex. I think the press has some responsibility in all of this. But I think Cory Booker also has some responsibility.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we didn't really get a good feeling or good understanding of who he and what he is all about.
If he had been extolled by the press as, you know, the guy we got to have, we would be here discussing whether we had been too involved in the electoral system. So either way, the press can't win, I think.
I suppose that's true. Maybe it's just that his message that love will triumph over all and his personal decency, which seems to be very apparent if you spend much time watching him, that was not enough to motivate an electorate. Maybe that's good. Maybe people are more focused then on the very intense issue-oriented campaigns that we actually are hearing coming out of Iowa. If you pay attention to what's going on, there is a lot of conversation about important issues going on in this
campaign.
Well,
if you watch Donald Trump, you certainly have the idea that various issues are very important, for example, his climate change denial and the rest of it. But in the end, who he is and what he represents as a human being becomes extremely important. And I think the press spends a lot of time on that.
You know, I've seen other candidates get saturated with coverage and haven't failed. I think this columnist at this point, sometimes they just stretch for a different take. And this is just reaching for something different than nobody else has. I don't recall being overwhelmed with Cory Booker coverage before this year. I don't think he got an inordinate amount of coverage.
Mm-hmm. There has been a lot. He was a meme on the internet. He was very popular.
Meme.
M-E-M-E. Yeah. I always want to say mime
as opposed
or
to
something.
Mean,
as opposed to meanie.
The opposite of that might be Deval Patrick, who has certainly not had a lot of coverage, but watched this weekend. He had an appearance before the editorial board and wowed the New York Times. They have an editorial about him today. I've seen a lot of new news about him. Like, well, maybe it's not too late. Maybe we should listen to this guy. So I think press coverage of Deval is going to be very interesting to watch.
In a very uncharacteristic way, I could just say, I just hope so, because I know him pretty well, and I love the guy, but so far, nothing.
Yeah, it's very hard to gain media coverage
right.
when you haven't been in the fight, when you don't have the money to project yourself forward, as Mike Bloomberg has, or as Tom Steyer has. The system, the political system, is such that it elevates certain people, whether the media want to cover
but
them
so
or not.
But so is the media. They're part of the system, Rex, and in this case, he entered very late because his wife had cancer. That's a great story. And why could not the media say, well, this is a really, as I think the New York Times may be trying to do, this is a guy that we dismiss because he was so late and he was on Wall Street. He's got a lot of negatives. You know, he's a Massachusetts governor. They don't do well in for Democrats at the presidential level, Dukakis. But they're saying, and they made a stop. It's a very interesting step. They're saying, maybe we should look at this guy. I don't know if it'll work or if it's important, but it's definitely something I've not seen a lot of.
Well, it also shows you that the New York Times, with tremendous power, so much that everybody's waiting to see what their endorsement is going to look like as we speak, has that power. They may be throwing up their hands and saying, we don't like what we're seeing here.
Well, they're doing something really interesting this time. They are interviewing each of the candidates, and they are putting the full transcripts online that you can read. And they annotate them with fact-checking and their own reactions to the discussion afterwards. It's fascinating to read, and it takes some time, but I think everybody who's going to vote needs to read them.
They're really interesting to look at the questions and some of the thoughtful answers. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that it's very contrary to what has been the tradition of editorial boards. When I worked for a big newspaper, I would usually, be invited to sit with the editorial board to cover their conversations with politicians like the governor or a senator. But when it came time to do endorsements, those were the closed interviews. Those are the ones that they wouldn't invite a reporter into. And our editorial board at the Times Union, we do not do anything off the record. When a politician comes in and says, well, I just want to have this be off the record, we say, no, we are never off the record. But we don't publicize. We've never done, and the Times has never before done anything where they actually put out in public their conversations with politicians like this. It's really interesting. By the way, if you wish to have your point of view shared, media@wamc.org is how you can be a part of this. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith. We are the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. There is just an interesting lawsuit that's pending here. A Harvard law professor, a guy named Lawrence Lessig, seen often on Fox News, who is suing the New York Times, not over a story being inaccurate, but over a headline that he says it has damaged his reputation. He calls it clickbait defamation because there was a headline about Jeffrey Epstein. And here's what the headline said. A Harvard professor doubles down. If you take Epstein's money, do it in secret. So in the article where he was interviewed, Lawrence Lessig condemned the donation of money to an MIT media lab by Epstein. But he said, quote, if you're going to take the money, you damn well better make it anonymous. So it sounds to me like the headline matched the story. But I'm just intrigued by the notion. What his point is that headlines are so important nowadays because people slip over stories and they just read heads digitally, that a headline that defames a person deserves some retribution.
You know, I love it. And I can tell you why I love it, because none of us, the four of us who are sitting in this room now, who haven't had somebody come up to us and yell about a headline that, on a story that we've written or that we know about it. And inevitably, our defense is, hey, lady, we don't write the headlines. Or, hey, sir, you know, I don't want to be sexist about it. We don't write the headlines. Rex writes them sitting there.
Right. If only.
And they're difficult to write. And anybody who's ever put out a paper know that it's dangerous territory. I think that one of the points this professor is trying to make is the fact that sometimes the headlines get disassociated from the text.
Yes, they do.
People don't read. They just share the headline. And as I read it, I thought the headline reflected the contents of the story. This whole idea of clickbait. I mean, long before the internet, headlines were trying to be clickbait, essentially. We were trying to get people to read the stories with the headline. And I don't think we need to make any apologies for that.
It's actually harder to write a headline in print than it is on the internet, because in print you have the stylistic, you know, a certain font, a certain size headline to make it fit. It's a great art, and the copy editors who can do it are really to be treasured, whereas your headline writing digitally is meant to reflect keywords. It's meant to draw page views.
Speaking more broadly, though, I think defamation law is under assault by the right, and this is one more case. It's just like Devin Nunes going after CNN. This is a baloney case. Two editors right here, and I would add to that, say, the headline does reflect what's in the story. And what's the court going to do? Demand that readers read every word of a story so they get all the context? You cannot put everything into a headline. It's baloney, and yet it's another assault. And I think you're going to see more and more defamation suits. I hope we will pay attention
to
them.
And it is a Harvard professor, and he's not the only Harvard professor who figures in this whole mess, because we see Brother Dershowitz as a guy who is sort of on the Trumpian side of things. Disgusting in my mind. However, the fact that these people are from Harvard, I think, counts to the media.
Mm-hmm. It does what? What did you say?
Counts? I think it's important to the media.
Media pays more attention, outsized attention
because
to them.
Of it. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
That's very interesting. Finally, this week, we need to just pay note of the fact that life imitates art. There's the very popular cable series Succession about a media mogul and family is at war with the right-wing media empire that the media mogul has. Lots of great prizes for that outlet. And here, Rupert Murdoch's son and his wife, James Murdoch, and his wife, Catherine, have stepped out from behind the father's media empire, attacking how it covers the climate crisis, especially in light of the fires ravaging Australia, which, of course, is Rupert Murdoch's native area.
And Murdoch himself said...
Yeah, Murdoch says no.
It ain't climate change.
Right.
He's wrong, of course.
So, yeah, it is not as though necessarily it's going to change anything, but it's just interesting to see the next generation of Murdoch saying that what you see on Fox News is views I really disagree with on Fox.
You know, Roselle and I went to see Bombshell. Is that the name
of
it?
Oh, great movie. Yeah,
it was terrific. Boy, you know, you really got a sense of how powerful some of these moguls can be.
You get it all in the Media Project, folks. Movie criticism, you know. Alan gives you style advice sometimes,
sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure.
Very good. All right, so don't fail to tune back in next week. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week on the Media Project.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.